Madam Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to allow me to address some of the parole board's concerns about Senate Bill 500. As a rule, we don't have a lot of problems with the 120% provision for nonviolent offenders. And the next provision after that says all inmates must be released when they have 9 months left in their maximum sentence. And it's obviously a controversial part of the bill. In fact, when this bill took effect last fall, these releases received very sensational and almost hysterical media coverage, unfortunately, maybe due to the timing of the election cycle. I'm not going to comment on that. But on the surface, it's easy to understand why. The parole board typically paroles about 3/4 of the people that come before us. Inmates that aren't paroled either are the worst behaved in the institution, or offenders that have refused to do treatment, including a lot of sex offenders, or sometimes a combination of the two. They're poorly behaved and they won't do any treatment. So the immediate response is, well, why should we reward these people with release? Why not just keep them every last day and be done with them for good? And that would be the easy way out, but is it in the best interest of public safety? I submit that it is not. So overall, the board typically, generally supports this provision, and here are the reasons why. First of all, recidivism studies conducted over the past 25 years by various agencies, including our own, show that inmates who max out and leave without supervision always have a higher recidivism rate than offenders who are released with supervision. That's at state level, federal level, multiple studies. Second, releasing these people, even if it is only for 9 months, and we wish it were longer, clearly is just not in, is, it is in the best interest of public safety. Think about what happens to the offender. Take your sex offender, for example, who leaves without supervision. He can drink, he can do drugs, he can live wherever he wants to, next to a daycare center, a preschool, it doesn't matter. Live with whomever he wants to, someone with little children in the house. They don't have to participate in counseling. They can go where they want and basically do what they want. Under strict parole supervision, which the department has implemented, these people can do none of these things. We control where they live, where they work, how they get back and forth to and from work, who they associate with, what time they're home, the counseling they have to go to. We can mandate polygraph examinations. We can do all these things. They have to have curfews. They see their parole officer 5 times a week in the case of sex offenders. They have to pay restitution. They have to get a job. In fact, we're in charge, not them. And we think that's important. And as Ms. Matheson so eloquently put it a few minutes ago, victims actually like this as a rule. I mean, most victims, if you want honesty, will tell you, we wish you could lock this person up forever. And sometimes so do we, but we can't. So therefore, we submit again that it's much better in everyone's interest to let them out with some supervision. We have one request, though, regarding this mandatory 9-month release. This has been interpreted as also allowing offenders who have consecutive sentences to be paroled to those consecutive sentences 9 months early. And that's been the interpretation of both the Attorney General staff and the prison record staff. And we suggest that you modify, because we know the intent was clearly to allow these people in the community with 9 months, not to get an early 9-month parole from one sentence to the next. So we hope you will address that facet of the bill. For the parole board, though, the most objectionable portion of Senate Bill 500 clearly is the 90-day sanction for old parole violators. And there are two main reasons for this. First, the law takes a one-size-fits-all approach, and one-size-never-fits-all. Second, the law sends the wrong message to the offender population. It basically says, whatever you do doesn't matter, because you're only going to stay here for 90 days. A core principle of discretionary parole is that inmates earn the privilege of parole, released with the understanding that if they don't comply with the conditions of parole, they can come back to prison. Senate Bill 500 eliminated any deterrent value of a parole violation. A parolee who violates his or her parole returns for 90 days, regardless of the seriousness of the violation. And having spent 18 years in the prison working with these people, I can tell you they are not deterred by the threat of 90 days. To use a cliche that I've used before this committee earlier, they can do that standing on their head. And they tell me that many times. In addition, excuse me, consider the supervision problems that this can create for our officers. Parolees know that the most they're going to get is 90 days behind bars. That tends to diminish the respect for the system. They're sitting across from their parole officer, and the parole officer is trying to address some violations in their behavior, and the offender could be sitting there thinking, well, yeah, that's true, but go ahead and violate me. I can do 90 days. It's not a problem. There are other matters to consider as well. Some offenders on parole, when they violate, present much higher risk than others, and it always comes back to sex offenders as the most obvious group. But a sex offender who we catch on the internet or viewing pornography or is unsatisfactorily discharged from a community therapy group also faces 90 days, the same as someone who got caught smoking marijuana one too many times. So again, one size does not fit all. And while I'm on the subject of parole violations, I have to address some misconceptions that exist regarding these violations. Some people think, well, they come back for drugs or missing a curfew or not going to treatment. That's usually not the case. In fact, since Senate Bill 500 took effect, over half, 55% to be exact, of the parole violators who we have revoked have been arrested in the community and charged with new crimes. Not all felonies, surely, but some felonies and some misdemeanors. Add to that another 18 to 20% who typically leave the area and just don't make themselves available for supervision. They abscond, they move out, they stop reporting to their parole officer. So combine those with the people that are arrested for new crimes. Now you're dealing with almost 75% of the parole population, of the parole violator population. So it's that other 25% that might be doing drugs and has exhausted all community avenues that the parole officers tried to work with. But I thought you needed to know that. Another selling point of Senate Bill 500 was that parolees who come back are going to be housed together and they're going to receive, quote, focused evidence-based treatment, end quote. Well, the treatment is being made available, certainly, but the majority of offenders that need it are refusing to do it. You can guess why, because whether or not they do it, they're going to get out in 90 days. The treatment providers up in the Berlin prison where parole violators are housed have asked me, isn't there something you can do? Can't you bring some of these people back before the parole board and make them do the treatment? And I said, no, we can't. And they know it. And that's why they're not doing it. And the majority of them, again, that need drug and alcohol treatment because of their parole violations, they're not doing it. So the board's position is simple. We need the discretion to deal with each parole violator on an individual basis. Our decision should be based on the specific details of every case, not on a cookie-cutter approach that treats everyone the same. A final concern of SB 500, as far as the parole board goes, is the provision that places certain parolees under administrative or inactive supervision. After 18 months of supervision, if a parolee is assessed and deemed low risk, the parolee shall be placed on administrative, essentially inactive, supervision. This includes sex offenders, and it should not. Sex offenders, unlike most other offenders, tend to think about what they do. They are deterred by the prospect of supervision in most cases, and they think before they act, and that goes along with the nature of their offense. They don't do things in a random and spontaneous nature. Their offenses are coldly calculated, plotted, schemed, and carefully planned. It's a critical error to take sex offenders off active supervision, even if they're doing really well, because if you take them off active supervision, you take away the deterrent value of supervision, and you leave them free to their own devices. The deterrent goes away. Now, this shouldn't include sex offenders of the so-called statutory rape category. The 18-year-old maybe had a 15-year-old girlfriend. They're not, in the opinion of most sex offender therapists, the same as the predatory pedophiles. But anyway, I respectfully ask that you consider amending the statute to reflect that concern. Thank you for allowing me to express our concerns, and I'd be pleased to answer any of your questions.